Welcome to the Sinister Sisters podcast. I'm Lauren.
I'm Felicia.
We're best friends.
And we like spooky stuff. And we just had a really excellent friend talk.
We did. It was so nice. It was like a very Lauren and Felicia one. Lots of venting, lots of planning our futures.
Oh, yeah. I think sometimes you forget, like, we did talk on FaceTime, I guess, but talking on the phone is, like, so therapeutic. Like, I forget to, like, call friends. It's such a nice thing.
It's the best thing in the world. I always.
And it feels like a thing of the past sometimes, but we can do it now.
Yeah. It's just so much better than getting a text message from somebody, too.
Yeah. Especially Laura and I have such a personality. A text is not enough. You don't really get to see all of it. We act everything out. Every story we act out.
Big hand gestures, yelling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. All caps only does so much for us.
It's true. I want to start sending you voice messages, too. But they're hard to listen to, is the truth.
I know. They are. Anyways, do you have any recommendations?
I do. So I did see the new Ant-Man movie, which I don't even really need to talk about because obviously, like, if you want to see a big Marvel movie, you're probably going to have seen it. It was, I will say, like, weirder than other Marvel movies, which I appreciated. It has Catherine Newton from Freaky. Great. Oh, loved her.
Good.
Yeah. And then I do have to just briefly say Michelle Pfeiffer is in it a lot and obviously big fan.
Yeah.
Couldn't have been a better gift to me than to have Michelle Pfeiffer in it a lot.
Yeah.
And her plastic surgery is unbelievable. I'll have to send you a screenshot.
What does she look like?
She looks like herself in the 80s.
Oh.
Like, I've never seen it done so well.
What? Oh, that's amazing.
Yes.
Once a week, like,
I feel like you have either option.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I was going to say you have either option, right? You get a bunch of plastic surgery and you, like, are trying to look young, but you don't really. Or you, like, age beautifully and naturally. Yeah. And it's like she's done something in between that's just amazing.
That's amazing. That's what I want. Like, I'm down to get Botox at a certain point. You know what I'm saying? But, like, not too much.
I know. I was like, should I start now?
Honestly, I have this little crease between my eyebrows that after a very stressful day, I'll come home and I'm like, why isn't it disappearing? Why is it indented into my skin? And then I'll freak out and then I'll calm down by the next morning. But yeah.
I feel the same way. I like come home at the end of the day and I'm like, my makeup is settling into my forehead creases because I'm old.
No! It's terrible.
And then I get over it. And then I get over it.
Yeah. That's good. I will tell you, like, Ant-Man is probably, like, the lowest on my list of things that I would probably see, but that's just because that's not my that's just not my thing. Like,
no, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I mean, I feel like I'm in this, like, Marvel unfortunate Travis, but
yeah.
Yeah. And that's I went with Willow and James, but I'm like, I feel like I'm, like, sucked into Marvel now. Where I'm like, I feel like I have to watch them all to, like, complete it. And I can't. It's too many things.
You can't. Because they've made so many. But Ant-Man, like, that sounds like it's so silly.
It's so silly.
Did you watch The Boys? Sorry.
No, I need to.
The Boys is great. There's one character that the characters can get really, really small. And there's a crazy sequence in which he's really small and goes into somebody's penis.
What does he find?
It's one of the most shocking episodes of television I've ever seen in my whole life. I will tell you that.
Oh my god.
I will tell you that.
That sounds wild. The only other thing I wanted to recommend, I will watch The Boys though first, but I also wanted to recommend You, the new season of You. Have you started?
I watched it all.
Oh, I haven't finished it. So don't spoil anything.
Okay.
But what did you think?
I didn't like it. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, okay. No, it's terrible.
It's terrible! Okay, I thought you were going to say you liked it, because you said recommendation.
No. Well, I don't know.
I thought it was awful.
Watch it.
If you want to know how bad it is, 10 minutes before the end of the season, so I'm in the last episode, I pause it, and I go to bed. I wake up the next morning and watch the last 10 minutes of the final episode. That's how bored I was that I didn't even care.
I know. Yeah. I think I'm going to have to like go in and like read synopsises of episodes because I don't want to actually go back and rewatch when I fell asleep.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. I've done it. You do it. Do what you got to do. It's just not that good. It's because there's no it's like, it's not the same format.
No. And I think they thought they were like doing something different. And I'm like, but we liked the format.
Yeah. I was like, what is this? Also, did the baby, what happened to the baby? Do you remember in the other season?
He just like drops it at a neighbor's house, right?
Oh, that's right. You're right. Like Harry Potter. Yes. I think that's right.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
He just doesn't give a poop anymore. So he just drops it.
Yeah. That was crazy. See, that season was great. Yeah.
Yeah. I just miss our favorite girl from all the Mike Flanagan stuff.
I love her so much. She's so talented. She's so like, just her face.
She really is so talented.
She has such good face acting, like Toni Collette.
Yes.
And Florence Pugh.
She's expressive.
She's expressive. Yeah, thank you. Recommendations for me. So I did binge all 6 seasons of The Mindy Project.
You watched them all already? I'm so impressed.
It's a shock. It's shocking. It does get worse and worse as the seasons go on, but I still enjoyed it very much. And I just couldn't stop. I think I also like, when I'm stressed, I feel like I like to like there's a lot of those episodes that I probably didn't fully watch, but I got the gist, you know, like I had it on the background a lot. But yep. I did watch all of that. And then...
Totally.
Today I watched Blackula from 1972. Because for my February Horror Movie Club on channel, we're doing movies with Black directors. And so we did Sweetheart last week, which is such... Have you ever seen that from 2019? Sweetheart?
No.
Oh my God. It's so great. You should watch it. It's like a deserted island... Like, this girl gets stranded on an island, and there's, like, a monster that comes out at night. Really good.
Sounds great.
It's really good.
Sweetheart.
Sweetheart, yeah. I think it's on Netflix or Hulu, one of those. And then Blackula was surprisingly, like, just a really good movie. It's definitely, like, it's so 70s. It's truly hilarious. But it's, like, you have this African prince. Who goes to this guy who, okay, he goes to Dracula. He goes to Dracula to ask for help in stopping the slave trade in like the 1700s. And then Dracula bites him. And then he is in a coffin until the 1970s in LA when he wakes up. And now it's the 1970s. And then he's Blackula. And it's wild. It's such an enjoyable movie. There's definitely some things in it that make you cringe a little bit in a 2023 viewership way. Like, there's some, like, homophobia and, like, things like that. But, like, overall, I was like, this is a great movie. So, that's a good one. And, yeah. That's, I think, my recommendations.
I love that. Yeah. I've never watched it, but I definitely need to. It feels like it was, like, monumental and historic, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, in terms of like Black horror films, absolutely. It's great. Let's do it.
Definitely. Here okay. we go. I'll add that to my list.
Yeah,
as you don't add Ant-Man to your list.
No. Yeah, the never-ending lists that don't really exist, but, you know.
They do sometimes when I need something to watch. Sometimes I'm like, what did Felicia talk about?
I feel like I just say that constantly where I'm like, I'll add it to the list. And I have no list and I didn't add it and I'll probably forgot. So I was projecting. I'm sorry, Lauren. I was projecting.
No, you are fine. Okay, shall I jump in?
Yeah.
Okay. So this week I am talking about the Denver Spider-Man. So back to Marvel.
Oh, no.
No, I'm just kidding. So this is about a man named Theodore Konies, and he was born November 10th, 1882, in Petersburg, Illinois, and his dad was a Canadian immigrant named Thomas H. Conies, and his wife was Isabella Elam. And basically, at some point, his mom moved Theodore to a farm near Wisconsin, and then they moved to Denver, Colorado in 1907. So his mom worked as a housekeeper at the Denver Democratic Club until she died in 1911. So I guess that was like, he was like in his 30s by then. So not like too tragic for him. Mm-hmm. But he is kind of a sad story. So he always, his whole life, suffered from poor health. He was told by doctors that he wasn't going to reach his 18th birthday. So he like kind of went on the track of like, he dropped out of high school. He was kind of like, F it, I'm gonna die anyway.
I would have done that. Honestly, I would have done that. I'd be like, I'm gonna go live as much life as I can. Yeah, feels like a waste.
Right? If you're not gonna live, I don't know. Like going to study hall? But he did not die. So he drops out of high school and then kind of like, you know, did sort of odd jobs. He worked as a bookkeeper for a while, but did spend most of his adult life homeless, which is pretty sad. Yeah, so he was always, you know, kind of resentful. Yeah, probably should have stayed in school. But he was always sad about just like how people treated him because of his health conditions. He was super skinny, kind of weird looking. And when our story sort of really begins is September 1941. So Theodore at this time was 59 years old. He really, you know, outlived what the doctors said. But he went to his former acquaintance's home, whose name was Philip Peters, to ask for a handout. Philip wasn't home, so he broke into the house and he started to like steal some food and money. And then kind of as he was looking around the house, he found in the ceiling of a closet, Theodore found this small trap door that led to this like narrow attic, you know, kind of area up there. And so he decided just to stay there without Philip's knowledge.
That's crazy.
Yes, this is one of those stories. So
I'm looking up. I'm like looking at my ceiling. I'm like, who's up there? Okay, go ahead.
They freak me out so bad. Have you seen that video of like the woman in the cupboard?
No, I have not.
I hate anything like this. There was like there was this video circulating for a while of this like little woman fitting up in the top of a pantry and climbing down.
Okay.
I'll find it. It's horrifying. So he goes up into this attic. He decides to stay there. He lives in the house without anyone finding him for 5 weeks, which is pretty impressive.
He must have been really quiet.
Yes. He just sneak down at night, steal little snacks.
Like Ratatouille. Oh my God.
So on October 7th, 1941, Philip Peters, the man who actually owned and lived in the house, found Theodore at the refrigerator. So he strikes Theodore with his cane, but Theodore had found an old pistol in the house.
No.
And had it, and so he clubbed him to death. Yes.
But he was in the house. He was the burglar.
Yes. That's you should just so leave, sad. I think. You should just leave. Just run away.
Yeah. Take your cane beating and get out.
Yep. But unfortunately, he keeps hitting him. Oh, actually, I just read the rest of my notes. So after the gun broke apart, Theodore continued hitting him with this heavy iron stove shaker. I guess I don't even really know what kind of utensil that is, but like kept hitting him.
Who cares? I bet it's heavy and it hurts.
Exactly. Oh, it's really sad. So Philip Peters was 73 years old at the time. Died.
Ugh.
Little Theodore sneaks back up into the attic. So Philip Peters' body was discovered by a neighbor later that day who was concerned that he was supposed to come over to her house for dinner, and he hadn't. And so she kind of like rallied up some other neighbors and they all were trying to get into the house, but everything was locked up. And so they found a way to get in through one of the windows, and the like one neighbor went in and basically everyone else waited outside until they heard screaming because she had found Philip Peter's body. So very sad, and very sad how she found him. So he was half dressed, horribly beaten. He had more than 12 wounds in his skull. Super dark, sorry. So the neighbors...
But you know what I will say?
Yeah.
It's that it only took a day for him to be found. Like, yeah. In my head, I'm like, if I was 73 and, like, died alone in my house, my fear would be that nobody would find me for weeks.
I know.
So, like, the fact that he was, like, social enough and, like, had a friend to come check on him the same day... Like, thank God.
I know. I'm like, good for him having a social life.
Yeah. Very impressive.
So they all, the neighbors call the police. The police come. And obviously, like, nobody can find any sign of forced entry. So, like, even, like, the, you know, chain on the front door is still, you know, chained up. And so they also find his wallet. They find cash. So they kind of rule out any kind of robbery or someone breaking in. So they decide at some point that the murderer could still be in the house. And so they do this big search of the house. They do find the trap door, but looking up at it, they're like, no normal sized human could fit up it. So they don't examine it any further.
Oh, man. They opened it and they just didn't look? That's crazy.
They just were like, oh, no one could fit up there anyway because it's so small. So they leave it. They, like, basically the case runs cold. And kind of as, you know, as we're sort of moving along in our story after this murder, the neighbors are obviously very freaked out about this and are kind of, you know, keeping tabs on the house. People hear noises. There's even, like, there was, like, a sighting of this man of, like, children were, like, walking by the house and said that they saw a face in the window. And so they call the police. The police search the entire house again, find no one again. Mm-hmm. And so now we're, like, now there's, like, starting rumors of, like, maybe the house is haunted. Like, maybe he died in this house and now his spirit is there. You know, freaky stuff going on. So... I did not mean to make this a plot twist, but it is now.
Oh,
Philip was married. So, Philip Peters. I know, I'm sorry.
What?
So.
I thought you were going to be like, plot twist, it was a ghost.
No. No, it's not a real plot twist. It's just, I probably should have told you earlier. But Philip Peters had a wife, but she was in the hospital. So, she was recovering from a broken hip. In the hospital and kind of before Theodore moved in. So that's like an added even more sad part is like she just like found out that her husband had been murdered in her house when she wasn't there.
Oh my God.
It's very sad. So she eventually moves back into the house. It's her house. You know, she owns it.
I could not. And so, I would not.
No, I don't know what I would do. Get an apartment.
Yeah.
But she moves back into the house. This is like amongst the neighbors saying it's haunted and hearing strange noises. So she has kind of like a housekeeper nurse that returns to the house with her. And both of them would hear strange noises in the night. And there is one night that the housekeeper woman hears a noise, gets up out of bed, walks out of her room and then sees a dirty man on the back stairs. But, excuse me, I just burped. No. That's disgusting.
It's okay. Go ahead. It's okay. It's because it's so shocking.
It's so shocking. It's upsetting. But when she like walks up to the man, this is the most disturbing part. When she walks up to the man, he starts chattering his teeth at her. Just creepy.
What does that mean?
Just I don't know. Like, I don't even know how you can do that. Just like da 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 da.
Like fast? Like fast or slow?
I think fast. I think fast.
Wait, do you
fast
see Toby
teeth
trying to
chattering.
Hit the microphone?
He was trying to show you what Toby? Chattering looked like.
Yes. He's scratching the microphone.
He's like, stop recording.
He said this story is too scary.
Too scary for little boys. So he's chattering his teeth. That reaction was so freaky, and the whole experience was so freaky that she just calls the police and leaves the house as quickly as possible, convinced that it's haunted, convinced that it wasn't a real man.
And left the lady in there.
Yes, which I do find upsetting.
A little rude, but okay.
Yeah, honestly a bad friend. But another neighbor offers to come stay in the house with her. And then again, several nights later, the neighbor hears something rattling around in the kitchen. And so she is so brave, apparently, that she goes to the kitchen without turning on any lights. And she says that she saw a filthy wraith-like thing and that it vanished when she screamed.
What is wraith-like? Like skinny?
I think like skinny. Yeah, like a ghoul.
Okay. Like a ghoul.
So
okay.
This was enough. This was enough now that Mrs. Peters decided to move. So she moves to Western Colorado to live with her son. And basically, like, other neighbors are sort of keeping track of the house, still seeing lights going on and off. There was even like one neighbor that eventually like goes over and knocks on the door with a baseball bat and then gets scared and runs away. So Theodore remained in the house without anybody knowing he was there, with everything kind of blamed on ghosts or local pranksters. And the police did continue to just make routine checks because of this. Like, people were calling the police, they'd come check the house. But finally, on July 30th, 1941, so just to give you some context, basically he moved in September of 1941, killed Philip in October 1941. So he'd almost been there for a whole year. So at this time, they finally see something. So the mailman comes by. And right at that time, so basically, like, police were outside. The mailman also came by. And right at that time, the curtains opened and a face looked out. So the first cop sees it, nudges the second cop. So they both saw the curtains together. And they basically decide to just go into the house, check everything out. And so when they open the door, they immediately smell a terrible odor, which is just really gross. Then they are like hearing noises, and so they go upstairs and perfectly time it that they see Theodore's legs going up the trapdoor.
Oh, that's such a horror movie image. That's so scary.
It's so scary. So they grab him, they pull him down, and basically discover that, you know, he had been living up in this attic. There was a single light bulb, his bed was an ironing board. And there was, like, some amount of bedding. And then they say magazines, which I'm just assuming has to be, like, porn magazines or something disturbing up there.
I mean, also, like, yeah, I guess what do you do all day up there for a year?
I don't know. Just sit there. But he, like, the space smelled so bad because he had been pooping and peeing up there as well.
Ew! Why didn't he just go down to the toilet? He was going to the fridge.
I feel like at that point, like, once everybody had moved out, then you should definitely be flushing that toilet.
Yes. Yes. Please.
So the police took him into custody, and they actually had to take him to the hospital first because he was so skinny and frail and not doing well. So once the hospital released him to the police, he confessed to the crimes. And that, you know, Denver Spider-Man name actually came from local newspapers. So the police detective, Fred Zarno, remarked after kind of finding everything that a man would have to be a spider to stand it long up there. Hence giving him the name Denver Spider-Man of, I think it's actually Denver Spider-Man of Moncrief Place is his full name, his full nickname. So he was tried and convicted and sentenced to life imprisonment at the Colorado State Penitentiary, and he was there until he died on May 16th, 1967. So it's sort of a sad tale, but very freaky. I mean, he honestly lived to be like, I think close to 80 years old. So he did really like outlive his, you're going to die before you're 18.
Yeah, but seriously.
Obviously just so sad that he murdered that man.
It's so crazy because I just watched an X-Files episode, and this is from one of the early seasons, about this guy that can like get into all the really tiny spaces. Do you know that one?
No, I don't know that I've seen it.
I can't remember what season it's in, but I scored at the thrift store recently and found like 3 box sets of X-Files VHSs. It was a big score.
I love that.
But one of the episodes, it's this guy that can just like shrink his body down to get in these really tight spaces. So he's like in the walls of houses and stuff. And then, but he like eats people's livers.
Ew.
So, but I'm curious, like I know like a lot of their episodes are based on stuff. So I'm like, I wonder if like that's based on this story, but I don't know. Sorry, Toby just
sneezed.
Honestly,
it could be. And no, I loved it. And I will say too, they do cover him on My Favorite Murder if you want to listen to that episode as well. But I just think it's such a freaky case, and I hate the idea of people living in the walls or in your attic or anything like that.
Yeah, me too. It's my nightmare.
Truly.
Especially because it's something that you feel like could never happen. The fact that it has happened at least more than once is very scary.
Well,
good job. That was a freaky story.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Shall I go?
Do it.
So I guess what our topics have in common this week is that we are both inspired by My Favorite Murder podcast episode.
There's our tie.
Yes. Or it's that both of our topics had already been covered by My Favorite Murder, so we both used it in our research.
Yes.
Yeah, so today I'm talking about the Boston Molasses Flood. This is a crazy, crazy, crazy story. Because and one idea, if you think of it as a cartoon, it seems funny. And then when you hear what actually happens during a flood of molasses, it's so dark, scary, horrifying. That it just, contrast is like, I can see this being a Mickey Mouse episode, and at the same time, it's like people are dead.
Yes.
So I don't know, but let's go in.
Oh gosh.
So this is this happened in Boston, in the North End neighborhood of Boston, Massachusetts, January 15th, 1919. And the basics of what happened is that a large container of over 2 million gallons of molasses, which was being used to mostly produce rum, different alcohols, burst and exploded waves of sticky syrup into the factory, out into the streets, and flooded the whole area with molasses.
Oh my God.
I was like, I'm waiting for your gasp. Oh,
just sticky goo over everything. Sticky goo.
Like basically like what looks like what I think about like tar and like a tar and feather situation. Or syrup. Ugh. But worse. Much worse.
Yeah.
Okay. So the wave of molasses was estimated to have been 25 feet high, which is like 3 6-foot
wow.
men on top of each other, plus a foot. Math.
Oh my God.
And it traveled at 35 miles per hour, which really feels too fast for molasses, because people say slow as molasses, and in my head that means maybe like slow, but 35 miles per hour, that is some fast molasses. I'm just saying,
that is very fast.
Yeah, too fast. The disaster, and I'll explain like what happened or how it happened in a minute, but the overall destruction. So injured about 150 people, killed 21 people, including at least 2 children. And this is, I know it's always strange how our minds feel worse about animals. I know it's so bad. And not in molasses. Oh, God. But we always feel worse about animals for some reason. Because they didn't build the machine. I'm sorry. But all these horses died. So this is a time in which, like, horses were, like, obviously a large portion of the transportation in Boston. And so there was just, like, tons and tons of horses that were killed. It is horrifying.
Ugh.
And then, of course, it also
caused. And they couldn't outrun it.
They couldn't outrun. Oh, my God. Stop. I'll start crying. I will cry right now. I'll freaking do it.
Black Beauty.
No! Oh, God. That's so sad. Yeah. But also, obviously, in addition to lives of human and animals lost, there was damage to all the buildings in the area. Lots of homes and businesses destroyed completely or heavily damaged. And there was all these rescue efforts that started pretty immediately. But because it was, I mean, it's just such a shocking thing. Like, nobody knew how to deal with the molasses or how to begin, like, rescue efforts with this sticky, like, thick liquid. Yeah. And so it was literally, like, very difficult to move in or through. Like, in a flood, like, you're, like, boat or something. Like, raft. But this, it's, like, it's so sticky. It was, like, so hard to get from one area to another just because of, yeah, just because it was sticky and thick and gross. But, yeah.
I mean, talk about unprecedented.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Situation.
Yeah. And by the way, I mean, and we'll get to this later, but it also has some, what's the word? Is the word I'm thinking of ramifications in our legal system?
Yeah.
No, is that right? Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Big word. So yeah, but we'll get to that in a hot second. But yeah, so it was really difficult to move through, very hard to find victims. There was a story about one guy that was, like, in his house and the molasses, like, came straight into the house to the point where he was like, oh God, and climbed on top of, like, his bed frame to, like, float above it. And it's such an insane thing to even, like, picture, because if you think of it like a flood, it makes sense. But then you start to think of it as, like, sticky molasses, and it's, like, does not compute visually. And most of the photos that you can find of this are of the aftermath. So it's not like you really see pictures, and it's also like 1919. So it's not like we're necessarily seeing pictures of, like, it as it's happening. But yeah, just very, very bad.
Ugh.
Yeah. So, okay. The reason for the tank's failure, I mean, there was, so of course, as soon as this happened, there was, like, a million lawsuits from families, from the government, from everyone to try to, like, find someone to blame, right? When something so horrible like this happens, it's like you need someone to blame. And it seems like what they've basically figured out is that it was a combination of different factors. So one, they had used a low quality steel in its construction. It had not been properly maintained over time. And it had been unseasonably warm out, which had caused the molasses to ferment and also and create gas. And molasses is supposed to ferment. I think that's how, like, that's used to turn into rum. And just, like, a side note that is interesting. So you'll also, if you think about the time period this is in, Prohibition was going to start in 1920. So Prohibition in the United States, basically, if you're not from here, it's a law that said you cannot produce, import, transport, or sell any alcoholic beverages in the United States of America. And this went from 1920 to 1933. And it's funny, like, thinking about that even being a thing now is so insane, especially with the amount of my friends that are bartenders.
Yeah, but truly.
Just, yeah. And so it's like it was an entire industry that was about to be shut down, and people knew it was coming. It wasn't like a night and day thing. So people knew it was coming. And so they believed that this plant was trying to like produce as much of this molasses for rum as humanly possible to make as much before the law went into effect where they could no longer produce it.
Wow.
Yeah. So very interesting. And I also I just realized I never said the company. So the disaster happened at the Purity Distilling Company facility, which was at 529 Commercial Street in the north end of Boston. So So it's January 15th. So we are in the middle of winter, but I mentioned the temperature a minute ago. But so they had been expecting very low temperatures, and it had gotten above 40 degrees, which this year, because of global warming, is very normal. I will say, like, even today in Brooklyn, like, it's February 20th. We have not had any snow here except for like one flurry. And the temperature right now is 61 degrees. In February.
61? Oh, my God.
Like, global warming is out of control. It's out of control. But anyway, but at this time, above 40 degrees, not what they had expected. And so the tank was just, like, not – the temperatures were not correctly put for the tank to be in that kind of weather at this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
So – and by the way, so when it finally did kind of go – people said that it sounded like a train passing. So there was an elevated train in Boston that made a lot of noise. Like, I think about like the subway here when it's above ground, it's like earth shattering how loud it is. A lot of people at first thought they just heard this train, and then like a big bang, if you will. And then they said it sounded like a machine gun because all of these. So the fasteners, like these, they're called rivets, but this, like the little bolts that you see in the side of something metal, it's because those were shooting out of the tank, like hitting the wall.
Oh my God.
Like machine gun level speed. And then
can you even just imagine like standing there?
Oh my God. It's like all is lost. Like this is the end. It's all over now.
End times. Yes.
So insane. Oh, so yeah, it was very, very bad. And it took, I don't even know. I thought I had this information, but I don't remember. But it took forever to clean up, basically. They were trying to find all these different ways to clean it. And that was the other thing. They had never tried to clean up a mess like this. I'm sure it's like similar, like the first oil spill. It's like, okay, how do we get this stuff out of here? Because initially they had just tried using water from like the fire hydrants, but it would not move it. And then they're trying to shovel it. They're trying all this stuff. And it's like they couldn't figure out a cleanup method until one guy was like, oh, well, let's try using salt water out of the like harbor. And so they did that. And somehow that was able to like push the molasses out. And then I'm pretty sure they just put it into the ocean, which is probably not what they would have done today. But whatever. No.
Those fish died.
All those fish full of molasses. They all got very tubby. Anyways, so yeah. So it took weeks to clean up the area, hundreds of people, and this is just a funny image, but all the crew, they had been working with the molasses and covered in the molasses on their shoes. And so they also like tracked the molasses all over Boston to their homes, to the subway, to whatever, the streets, everywhere. So all of Boston was just sticky. It was reported, this is a quote, that everything that a Bostonian touched was sticky.
Oh my God.
And this is the thing. It's like people die, but it's also like it feels like a Mickey Mouse cartoon. It's so crazy. Okay. And then like to come around to good that can, but I guess, is all these lawsuits that I mentioned, they ended up basically saying that it was the fault of the company for not properly building their tanks. And so it started kind of the first bit of government control over private businesses and infrastructure, where things had to start being approved by the government to be built. And the government had to have like records of who had built things and how. So because this stuff didn't exist. So it's like when a disaster like this happened, it's like who was to blame, like who built the tank? And it's like the government didn't even have that information because there was no legal reason right. for the company to report it to them previously. So yeah, and so that basically has started like what is now very normal, which is even if you walk down like my street right now, it's like to have construction on something here, you have to have a work permit from the government. They have to know what you're planning to do.
Right.
And you have to follow all these guidelines and whatever. And also having corporate or private companies being liable for public disasters. So in some ways, I'm like, it's not that obviously
which
this is terrible thing that
good. In some
but yeah,
ways.
But these things are important, I think, because companies need to be responsible for the chaos and that they create. And because I think we even have problems with that today with gas companies, that sometimes they're not held as accountable because they have so much money, which is a whole nother deep dive. But
right.
But yeah, so yeah, that is the Boston molasses flood. It was freaking crazy town. The horse thing really made me sad. And and yeah, very sticky.
I mean, the cleanup, I just can't imagine. I mean, it is mostly just so sad that all those people died. But then I'm just like, I am sure they were finding molasses and things that
they had no idea
for years to come.
They also have said still to this day, if it's a hot day in Boston, you can still smell the molasses, which is like unclear if that's actually true. But apparently you really could for a long time.
That is disgusting. And also I believe it.
Yeah, I totally believe it. It also makes me think about like Toby. Like if Toby peed on this rug recently, which it's not normal behavior for him. So we were mostly just sad about it as a family. I was like, Toby, this is so unlike you. But anyways, so he peed. And like how hard it is for me to get a small dot of pee out of my rug to get like, oh, did I even tell you this? 2 million gallons of molasses out of Boston.
Oh my God.
I don't think I ever said that number. 2 million gallons. I hope you're still listening, dear viewers or dear listeners. 2 million gallons. It's freaking crazy.
That is horrifying. That's so much.
That's too much. That is too much molasses. Okay, that's it.
Well, I'm horrified and delighted. Thank you for sharing that crazy story.
Anytime. And for everyone else, appropriate. We hope you have some sweet, sweet nightmares.
Ooh, molasses nightmares.
Yes.
Bye.
Where you're just drowning in molasses. Okay, bye.